Hi everyone, you're listening to Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. This show is all about building a hub of relevant, insightful, and actionable business insights that can help drive greater performance and innovation. I've worked with several tech startups myself and know from experience that success is underpinned by a passion for continual learning and growth. So I'm grateful to have the opportunity to speak with our guests and learn from their stories. If you enjoy this podcast, you can download the free ebook featuring my personal podcast highlights from the past 2 years at www.venturi-group.com/podcast-ebook. If you're looking for more information on today's episode, just head over to the Venturi website to check out the show notes. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Today's guest is David Cavanaugh, the CTO at Purple Bricks. David, absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Andy. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Yeah, mate. I'm really looking forward to the conversation. Your background and experiences are kind of, well, incredible, really, what you've achieved and the projects that you've been a part of. So, it's going to be a pleasure chatting with you today. And, some of the things that I actually have some my notebook at the ready today, which I've admittedly so I don't always have, no disrespect to the other guests, of course, but when I know that I'm about to ask something that I'm genuinely going to try and take on board, the notebook comes out, and then, of course, I have such bad handwriting that inevitably I can't read what it says the next day. That's a problem of mine that typically happens. Mate, tell us a little bit about kind of how you started off your career and kind of progressed to actually becoming a CTO, in short, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure. It was, it wasn't really necessarily by design, although it was always ambitious. It really started from a deep love of technology from an early age. Pretty typical story, I reckon. Being a 10, 12-year-old kid in rural Ireland at the time in the 80s, I got a computer, a personal computer, one of the new breeds from the 80s. It wasn't the Commodore 64. I mean, many of my friends probably had Commodores and Amstrads, but this was a Sword CGL M5. Have you heard of that one?
I don't think so.
Not many people have, to be fair. Cassette tapes at the ready and a few programming magazines, and I, copied in a program and altered it. And, I found my love from there, really. And following from that, went into uni and did a computer science degree. And really one of those boring careers that, I've been in computing, IT, digital, call it what you will. I've been in it for the entirety of my career. So that's kind of the backdrop, really.
Yeah. Awesome. And obviously you've been a part of so many different kind of different companies and I suppose all different shapes and sizes as well. I'm always curious as well about some of the consistent things that you kind of held true. I know I was reading one of your presentation. I think it was the presentation that I was looking over. And, interestingly, it reminded me very much some of the work on there about the kind of agile frameworks and the Scrum work. I don't know whether that was necessarily conscious in this presentation, but, the idea around things like, people, process and technology, and having, a basis for decision making and having something that allows you to make good, consistent decisions throughout your career. Do you feel like, that's something that you've always kind of have consciously seeked out? Or was that something that was kind of part of your kind of early, early kind of education into the working world?
That's a great question. I suppose I've really been conscious of it over the last 6 to 8 years in terms of, what's the recipe or the secret sauce, as people call it, to a great collaborative working environment to build digital platforms. And, you know, you talked about the, I didn't necessarily consciously, at least, draw from Agile. I just kind of sat down with a blank piece of paper and thought, what is the secret sauce? And you know, a sauce is a recipe. You know, it's not a silver bullet, or it's a combination of things. Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, I really do believe that it all starts with the people. And that includes the team and culture. It's a simplistic way to look at it, but I think if you look at it in terms of people, process, and then technology, that for me gives you a baseline to work from. There's a lot of detail in those three things, but for me, the people are the important part of that recipe, and getting the people part right, and then some process or ways of working, I prefer to call it, because process kind of infers, you know, a lot of bureaucracy or red tape or bit of a corporate environment, which you know, a corporate environment is great for a big corporation, and it's kind of necessary. But for me, where I'm at and where I want to be at isn't the corporate world. So I call that ways of working. And, you know, as you scale a team, you need different ways of working along the way. So yeah, people, process, and technology in a nutshell. Yeah.
Interesting. Your kind of typical approach to people, you mentioned that, you know, you had that awareness. Do you have kind of a philosophy around hiring and kind of retaining staff and getting the best out of people that you've developed? Has there been any things like books or anything like a framework or anything that you've followed, or have you kind of developed your own, philosophy around that?
Yes, it's a combination of many, many different inputs and you know, sort of mental stimulation from books, podcasts, and magazines, and so forth, and just day to day experience. I think it's in some ways it's a basic observation, and it's always an attempt for me to remain emotionally intelligent. That is to say, to try and understand people, care about people, and create an environment where people can flourish. And I suppose it's easy to say that, but in practice, there's a lot of detail behind that. But, you know, whilst I love technology, it's people that have made all the difference. And I've always said that motivated people, you know, tend to create the best technology and great software as a product of a happy team. So going back to your question, I think key for me for recruitment, I think recruitment and retention are enormous topics. I won't try and delve deep into them again, but recruitment is a case of people with a growth mindset. What do I mean by a growth mindset? I mean, you know, in all walks of life, but particularly in technology, I've just made observations that there's a technology, or digital as we call it now, is an industry that's got enormous change and rapid change, and, you know, technology companies coming and going and technologies coming and going. So you want to embrace change if you're in that industry. But there is people, you know, within our industry that don't necessarily always keep up to date, and they find a niche, and, you know, they work in that. But for me, a growth mindset is one where people are always looking to self-develop.
Yeah.
They believe that they can improve. And, you know, they turn setbacks into success. So it's a kind of a resilience. So, you know, in recruitment, I'm looking for that sort of individual. And with retention's a little bit more difficult. And I've certainly got work to do on retention in terms of, you know, working through my processes on that. But it's fair to say that people want progression, and they want recognition. They want you know, and they want mastery. So if you can provide an environment, an ecosystem that allows a level of autonomy over technical decisions, and also an environment where that individual's mastery can be improved, so they can become, you know, more and more skilled on something that that interests them and then benefits the company as well. So, you know, that's it in a nutshell for me.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's one of those things. Certainly, when I was kind of early on in my career, that you don't necessarily think about. And probably don't even give it the props and wonder, like, what are those senior guys actually doing? And then you actually get there and it's all you spend your time thinking about, really, you know, essentially, is how to get the best out of people. You know, for you personally, when you kind of started having to focus on that and your responsibilities perhaps shifted from, I suppose, hands-on work, for lack of a better term, is that something that you enjoyed? For you personally, what was always kind of gave you the greatest kind of sense of fulfillment within your roles and responsibilities?
My first experience of leadership was around 2003-2004 with a project for DEFRA. It was for the Emissions Trading Registry, and it was a reasonably small team of about 10 people, but we had an enormous sort of deadline in terms of it was the Emissions Trading Registry. So it was the UK's and seven other member states across the EU initiative to build an Emissions Trading Registry. And the deadline was January the 1st, 2005. Mm. I think I got the year right. 2005, yes. And if it wasn't delivered by then technically not the Prime Minister, but the one down from the Prime Minister, the Secretary of State, would be in breach of contract. So it was an enormously pressurized deadline. But it was enormously fun as well, and that was my first real, you know, meaty experience of leadership. And what I found is that I naturally was more of a servant leader in many ways.
Right.
Partly out of inexperience, but also because I knew I wasn't the biggest brain in the room necessarily. I was more of a generalist, if anything, and there was lots of people in the room that had got terrific specialism in either the ins and outs of the Kyoto Agreement or the kind of orb that we were building. We had an proprietary object mapping tool, you know, whatever it was. My approach, really by default and still is to a large degree, is trying to just really collaborate and bring people together and get the best out of everybody.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I think so. It's interesting. I think our motivations change over time. I love the kind of the growth mindset. It's something to always kind of be conscious about, and I quite like the grasp of it as a concept to kind of refer back to as well when making decisions and deciding where to go with your career. It's a great basis for kind of what you are motivated to be like, and I think whatever the vision is, it can change for you as an individual. I'm sure you've had all over your career kind of points of reflection where you could have stayed somewhere and perhaps, you know, made great larger sums of money or had a more comfortable life. Do you feel that because you kind of feel as though you possess that growth mindset, you kind of also have to be a little bit more willing to take risks at different times as well?
Yeah, risk is definitely part of it. There certainly has to be an element of understanding that you don't necessarily grow without taking a leap of faith or trying something out and being prepared to fail ultimately, because a lot of what we do in life really is fail, isn't it? I mean, we don't always shout from the rooftops that we had a, you know, we failed at six things today. But you know, part of having that growth mindset is the ability to fail and learn from those mistakes. So undoubtedly, I mean, I'm a mixture of both, really. I've probably stayed too long in some places and not moved on as quickly as I might have, or maybe I've definitely taken the comfortable path, and I've definitely taken the path that isn't so comfortable as well. So, you know, moving into something that's pretty new, I've been involved in about five startups, and you know, probably you can only measure two as successes, but the three that, you know, weren't commercially successful, they certainly had other successes in terms of lessons learned and just even enjoying the process, just day to day having fun, building working and personal relationships. But undoubtedly, you've got to have a level of attitude, you know, that allows risk to undertake some of those.
Yeah. Do you think that as a technologist now, obviously you mentioned, you know, sometimes the startup or the idea doesn't work necessarily, but do you think that as a technologist now, you can still get a sense of fulfillment even if the project doesn't commercially have success? Or do you think that, you know, technology now and technologists in general, they only feel fulfilled if there is that commercial success along with the project?
I can only speak personally. I think that commercial success is the icing on the cake. As a technologist, one of those startups I mentioned was really engineering wise was something I was proud of, even though I wrote a lot of the code, which I laughed to myself, because although I try and, you know, keep up to date and with frameworks and language, if I was to put code in production these days, it would be pretty ropey code, I'd imagine. It might just work, but certainly looking back on one of those startups, the engineering was first rate, the product was first rate, but I didn't have anybody, I didn't have any commercial acumen at that time to push the project forward, and I didn't have any partnerships, and I didn't have any marketing, so it didn't work out. But it still gave me a huge level of satisfaction. But you know, without the commercial, the commercial aspect, then it doesn't scale, does it? You know, it kind of ends. And you've just got to take the best out of it and move forward.
Interesting. Yeah. It's been a significant shift. I think that, you know, we talk about having the growth mindset, and I think it's changed so much now because technology is so much so the product and the way that people monetize, that, you know, the whole attitude towards it has, I think, significantly changed in recent times from being, you know, providing service and being niche to now, you know, as we talk about having that kind of growth mindset and commercial awareness, those skills are seemingly just as, if not more so, important now than actually, you know, taking care of the code.
Yeah, they totally are. And, you know, you look at some of the biggest sort of startups and success stories in Silicon Valley, you got Stripe, the payment provider, payment processor, and I saw an interview with their founder recently, and I think the first 20 or so people they took into that startup were people who'd been on startup journeys before, and I think all of them incredibly had their own startup and had experienced not just engineering culture, but you know, general business exposure to trying to get a product off the ground commercially, as well as from a coding perspective. So yeah, totally agree with what you said.
Yeah, interesting. You know, your motivations, I'm curious, as like you know, as someone, you know, as from a personal level as well. You, as you get older, you have, you know, children and things like that. Do you think that it's healthy to kind of compartmentalize the two sides to your life, so that you have, you know, the personal side that's one thing, and then you behave, you know, in a certain way towards business and remain, you know, disciplined to what you're trying to work towards? Or do you find that, and do you think that it's healthy that, you know, aspects of your work do change as you kind of go through different life phases?
Definitely think it's healthy that, your attitude to work and your practices change throughout your career. But I'm not one for this work-life balance malarkey, really, and living for the weekend and, work hard, play hard. We're in a 24-hour world, whether we like it or not, Andy, because, you know, the reality of it is you might be contracted 9 to 5, 9 to 6, whatever it is. But, you know, we've got that many devices and apps and what have you that we're undoubtedly, particularly in this industry, going to be contacted out of hours. So what I strive for is not a work-life balance, but a work-life interlock. What I mean by an interlock is it's just so that I can live my work life and with my personal life that it works together and it works in a way that's gonna be harmonious to me. So that if I need to take a few hours off in the morning, I don't have any guilt because I know, you know, some Saturday evening in the future I might be, you know, working a couple of hours or more. So it's really, you know, for me, my next move is really around enjoying that process, every single minute of every single day, and not hankering after the weekend or, you know, 6 o'clock. You know, I wanted to really be a part of who I am and you know, even to the point where, you know, my family can be included and, you know, they can understand my challenges, my ups, my downs, and, you know, anything. Like, I think that's the future of work, really, that sort of balance.
Yeah, I think it's got to move that way, I think, right? I mean, it's just, yeah, it's such a beautiful, I mean, hopefully technology will play a part in that, you know, it will allow us to especially automate aspects of the work life that perhaps are taking up a lot of our time now. And that'll be a healthy thing. But yeah, I mean, it's things have changed significantly, you know, just economically now it's not viable it's very difficult, should I say, to have one income, for instance. So you kind of need a lot of the time, like two incomes coming into the family. That means that, you know, you have less time away from, you know, your children now more so than ever, for example. Like, why should that be the case? You know, just because we're sticking to this, you know, Henry Ford kind of 9 to 5, which no one does now. Now it's like 8 till 7 for most people. So, you know, that if people are willing to do that, then, you know, the idea of flexible hours should be there because you know that you've got a committed workforce that you can trust. And I think that's what attitude significantly needs to change, knowing that people are going to get their work done. It's clearly just down to element of trust, surely.
Yeah, I think trust is one thing, but it's also a very different idea, and it's a kind of a disruption, and any kind of disruption takes a while to bed in and for acceptance to happen. So I think we're slowly seeing a change towards a more flexible, nomadic kind of, particularly digital workforce, and recognizing that people are central to that again. So some people work better of an evening or a morning, and that idea as well that, you know, give to the people, give to the employers, sorry, the employees, give time to them so that they can organize their personal life. And the idea that they'll give that back probably, you know, in spades, because they'll feel valued in the workplace. They'll feel less stressed about their family life, and they'll feel more engaged and positive about where they work. So I think we're getting there, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has to. I think we just have to keep talking about it. You know, and I think, like I say, there's almost no excuse in so many different jobs now to kind of, it has to be irresistible. And like I say, a lot of people are building flexible lives around their workers, and I think it's going to be a significant change. And I'm sure, you know, whatever you go on to do, you'll probably want your team to feel reassured that this is how you feel about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talked about, you know, attitudes changing throughout your career, but I think that's reasonably fixed idea in my mind, that flexibility, that respect, showing that respect to colleagues and team members, and again that trust, you know, that pays back all around. It's you know, it's really something that I value.
Awesome. Don't want to keep you too much longer here, David, because I know, you're still extremely busy. So I'll kind of finish on something around kind of goal setting and things, which I tend to do actually at the moment for some reason. I think maybe because I'm trying to figure this one out myself. But, you know, so how are you approaching, like, how have you historically and how are you now, I suppose, approaching goal setting and actually working towards achieving something? Do you set yourself timelines? Do you, you know, how do you approach it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And if you find out the answer to that, Andy, please please get in contact. It's definitely iteration after iteration. I mean, I'm very goal orientated. I've got lists. You know, my current weapon of choice is Trello. I've got Trello boards with lists and so forth, and goals and objectives. But I think my overall approach at the moment is more zoomed out, really. So all I do is I pick a few areas of my life, be that relationships, be that you know, technical knowledge, or be that something else. Networking, for example, is what I'm working on at the moment. And I set myself, I really believe in goals and deadlines. I know everybody would agree with me on that, but it works for me. So, you know, all I do is set some goals and deadlines within the areas. But in the past, I've tended to really push a lot on myself and invariably, you know, set myself up to fail a bit, because with the best will in the world, I'm not going to go to, you know, 20 events in the next month or something like that. So I try and, you know, really just minimal viable product, really. So have just a distinct few that I really feel are of value, and hit those goals, and then just iterate on that. So, you know, no real, you can, you know, nothing really for you to write down in notepad, really. But as I said, it's one that, and I think the other piece of advice is really to understand what's in your control and what isn't in your control, and, you know, working from there, and not beat yourself up about it if you don't always get there.
Awesome. Well, I think it's a good point. I think I'm still learning. I'll take your advice and probably let you know how I get on, David. So I'll keep you in the loop, mate. David, it's been a pleasure, mate. We're right at half an hour now. Thank you so much for the time, mate. Really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to check out more of Venturi's Voice, but you're unsure where to begin, you can find my recommended top 12 episodes Venturi-group.com/podcast-ebook. See you next time.